trickling streams find their way to the rivers, and they are rivers. Rivers run to the ocean, and they are ocean. Blessings fall upon you like soft rain from the lofty clouds, filling the holy grail of our hearts. As sunlight fills space. These moments together are timelessness. They are resonance, here and now. They are discovery of who you are, not who you become, but who you've always been. Welcome to Star Media Transmission, dedicated to the great mystery.
In my mind, I'm seeing you, you know, with this vast knowledge from the Eastern traditions, but not of any one in particular.
Right.
And in listening to you and having, you know, also studied, you know, in a sort of a generalist sort of way, Hinduism and Buddhism and various stuff, and Jainism and so on. But with your depth of knowledge, and in particular, it's more than knowledge, it's your experience in that. What I'm increasingly hearing is, and recognizing, is familiarity. I know this, but it's not I know it here. It's I know this in some other way. And inside, I'm smiling. So I've really started thinking about why. When the language that you use and the traditions that you come from in what you're saying are so different to the tradition that I come from.
That's interesting.
And the physicality of my experience, whereas your knowledge is coming from, you know, all I can think of, and you'll correct me on this, is something, yours is about mind space, and where I come from is a very physical sort of landscape body space, that all Narayan knowledge is in the landscape and the body. And where you're coming from is the same, only it's in a kind of not even abstract, it's in the mind, it's of the mind.
Well, we would call it transcendental experience.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. And what I've felt in the last couple of discussions we've had, you know, once you stopped interviewing me and we started having conversations, what I've noticed is this kind of flow of these two knowledge systems coming together, the earth and the body and the mind and the spirit, but they're the same.
Indeed.
They're the same.
Indeed. Can I come in here for a minute?
Yeah.
Well, Hannah, I think that the same happens for me. Because for me, the Aboriginal of Australia particularly, because I've been in Peru with the shaman there, I've been in the United States at the Sundance, and I have a particular place with the Lakota Indians, but really the Australian Aboriginals draw something that I also know and can't intellectualize, and it's very similar to you. So there's a crossbar here. Like on a crossroads.
It kind of makes me sort of see visually this, you know, it's a convergence. It's a convergence where everything that is that I know from Aboriginal, it comes from the land, It is embodied in the people. It's embodied in nature. It's embodied in the relationship system. Expression is literal, L-I-T-E-R-A-L, literal. Mm-hmm. Aboriginal, my mob, my countrymen, don't abstract in the way we abstract. They don't intellectualise in the way I intellectualise. They will answer my questions with a literal experience.
Right.
For example, if I talk about the ages and stages of growing from, you know, from seed through childhood, through adolescence, through adulthood, to wisdom, and I'm sort of talking about that in an intellectual way because it's a kind of an idea that I'm developing, Muljali will say to me, "You know that frog? That frog begin with that egg in the water, too many egg, under that leaf. Then that tadpole, he come out. He got all that frog juice in him, all that frog knowledge in him. All that spawn knowledge in him. And then that tadpole, swimming around in the water, and that tadpole thinks, hey, this all right, I'm boss of this world."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then one time, tadpole starts getting legs and gets to the edge of the pond and starts to walk up. Hey, what this about? I got legs, I can walk up this edge. And pops his head out into the air. And then he breathing that tadpole. He's not a tadpole anymore. But his tail doesn't fall off. His tail is resorbed into his body. So now, as emerging frog, his spawn, his tadpole, and becoming frog. Then he comes up on the land, now he proper frog.
Right.
He still swim all right, but he proper frog now. And what happened now? What happened now is this frog, he listen, he can feel wind, he look at Milky Way, and when rain coming, he tell us when that rain is coming. He'll tell us when rain is coming, and he'll get all his countrymen to tell us, rain coming now. And with rain, he spits up into the cloud, opens a conduit, and the lightning comes down. And then the rain comes. That's why frog is Bunman. Bunman being spiritual elder, if you like.
Okay.
So what Muljali, you know, while I talk about, you know, kids being seeds and then prepubescent and then, you know, adolescent and then all this, Muljali acknowledges what I'm saying by telling me about something literal.
Yes. I also feel that, that's very interesting what you're saying. I also feel that what we speak of is also literal. And isn't that interesting? Because I always feel too, Hannah, and probably, well, I don't know why the Aboriginal attracts me so deeply. I mean, very, very deep in the core of my heart and soul, the Aboriginal has a very prominent place. And I sense that part of my experience is that nature always, always is the teacher. And the direction and the opening and the wisdom.
Mm-hmm. And look, I was, we've had a decision made here in Western Australia recently where the Premier has announced that he's going to shut down 150 remote communities in Western Australia.
Well, that's big of him.
150, and their languages, and he's going to relocate them to places where they can get Western education, Western employment, and Western housing.
That's a shame.
Which in my mind is colonization all over again.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling, my heart is just crying over this, because Australia has, as I've said to you already, Australians and Australia has remained determinedly ignorant about Aboriginal law and knowledge and knowing in what we're talking about. And here we have the oldest continuous culture on earth, the people, and it's remote people, who are the knowledge holders and hold this in their bodies of at least 40,000 years, could be 400,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
With the archaeological evidence that's in this continent. For us, who've been here a blink of the eye, a couple of hundred years, to say we are going to move you and your identity and belonging and this 40,000 years of knowledge which is in your bodies, your minds and your spirits, and we're going to move you into a 40-year-old bitumen-covered concrete and tin environment, I think, is cultural genocide. That's my opinion.
That's been going on for a long time.
But getting back to what you're saying, I think that, you know, that the attraction for you, if I'm not wrong, is that you know that there is this knowing.
Yes.
It's the original human knowing.
Absolutely.
As far as it's possible for us to tell.
And
it doesn't exist anywhere else on earth.
Agreed. And it's not only in a state of utter innocence, it's in a state of extraordinary intelligence, extraordinary sensitivity, extraordinary communion with, not actually with is even wrong, as nature. Huh?
Well, that's it, because that's law is nature. Nature is law.
Exactly.
And as Muljali would say, we don't have that law written on milli-milli paper. Our law, there's our copyright, our law is there.
Right.
That's where we pay tax.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
It is, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's so comprehensive that I think I said to you in the last conversation that when an Aboriginal, when Muljali thinks, closes his eyes and says, who am I? Which he probably wouldn't even say.
Right.
What he sees is a comprehensive map of his countrymen and his country, and that's what he sees. When you or I close our eyes, I guess we see family as well. I'm not sure, but we have this notion of I, of I the individual. It's the biggest burden, I think, that we carry.
I agree.
And I wanted to move on to language and gesture.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is integral to what, you know, to what I was just talking about, which is you know, the antiquity of this profound knowledge coming up through languages before words. And languages before words include painted images, body painted images, attunement with energy, energetics, sounds. But what Narayan feature is, you know, certainly there's word language, but there's no written language. What Narayan communicate very strongly with is entire body is gesture. So, for example, I'll ask Muljali, "You right?" And he goes, "Only that, we got that one there." Okay? Now, what on earth has he just said to me? What has he said to me? He said, "Nod, yes." He's looked away, telling me, "Ah, there's something that's on his mind." He's turned the other way. He's made his, pursed his lips, and he said, "That over there," and when I look over there, there's an issue or an idea or I don't know what, and he's saying, "Only that one is something that we need to talk about." All right? Gesture, body gesture, is it, you know, I mean, it's so for all of us.
Yes.
But with Narayan, there's so many positions of the head, up or down, which is language, and eyes, you know, head this way. In a way, it's like neuro-linguistic programming, you know, to track right through what some of the body movements are. And then he might tap his knee. That's telling me, ah, there's some knowledge coming from his lian, his spirit. And he says, "That man, he tell me nobody go to that place." My lian don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not calling him a liar.
Right. There's just a difference in view.
His lian doesn't accept that.
Mm-hmm.
He's thought of that story.
Mm-hmm. That's very beautiful. There was a woman in India named Ananda Maima. You might look her up. She was extraordinary. And she had what she called her Ketal. And, well, Ma was really, really, really bizarre. And she didn't mean to be bizarre. She just was bizarre. And what I mean by bizarre is she did odd things that she didn't perpetuate at all. She was the guru of Indira Gandhi. She had thousands and thousands of people around her. And Ma always listened to her Ketal. Exactly as you're saying. She listened to that which was guiding her from a deep intuitive and wisdom place. And it's really interesting that you say that about Muljali. Thank you. Will you pronounce his name for me one more time?
Mul, like owl.
Okay, Mul.
Mul.
Uh-huh.
Jali.
Jali. Okay, Muljali.
Like jelly.
Uh-huh, thank you, because I'm always pronouncing it incorrectly. Thank you, Muljali.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just Mul for short.
Okay.
I call him Mul.
Okay, Mul.
Yeah, which is Mul, Al, Mul.
Mul.
Gesture is absolutely so revealing. We can be out walking in the bush, and just the shape of the walk, the pace of the walk, the sound of the walk, the stance of his shoulders, and the movements of his head. And from all of that, you can read that he's listening alertly. He's acknowledging the trees, he's acknowledging the leaves, he's acknowledging the wind and the birds. His footstep is light. So he's acknowledging, you know, the goannas and the, you know, the little lizards and the tatar lizard and the ants and the spiders in their webs. He's acknowledging it all as he goes along, because you can see it as his head is acknowledging. So he's not engaged in a conversation. He and the rest of us are walking, are moving. It's like we're moving in a wave. Just curling our way through the bush.
And through the moment and through the experience. And also I'm thinking while you're speaking, Hannah, that this kind of language can be seen from a long distance.
It can. Well, it can be felt from a long distance.
Oh, wow.
Right? So that, you know, we've been driving on a track, you know, for several hours, and we get to an outstation, a settlement, and they're waiting for us. Mm-hmm. And you say, hello. Well, they don't, they just nod. And I say, did you know we were coming? And they laugh. Like, of course.
Right.
And I think, oh, well, they must have seen the dust from the road and the car. And then I look at the food that's been prepared, and it's been cooking for way longer than the dust on the road's been visible.
Mm.
So there is a knowing. Another kind of knowing is, another form of it is, when we're walking and a branch comes off a tree, Marjali stops and they all look at each other. Everybody looking. That branch come off a tree. And I say, well, what happening? Might be somebody hurt. That tree tell us.
Uh-huh.
One of my boys, Gideon, he was so certain that, you know, he was at school and, you know, something happened at school in down near the river. That he rang me and said, something's happened. I said, what? He says, I don't know, something's happened. He said, you're in Moanjum. I rang Moanjum, and sure enough, somebody had passed away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something that the human being now has, there's like a door shut. I know that that door, and I know that that ability is possible. And we've had those experiences, but not in such a fluid language that it shows up time and time again. Or, you know, I mean, we may know that somebody is going to ring us. We may know that somebody's passed away. We can feel it. But this language is, the door is open. The channels are clear for the Aboriginal. Where for us, we also analyze it and say, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure that I can believe that. And when it's acknowledged or when it's seen as so, then we have faith in it. But there's this nervousness about this kind of intuition. Don't you feel that's true?
Well, you know what? I think we're infected by the fallacy of the absolutism of logic and reason.
Agree.
And if we can't explain it in logic, in other words, if it is not in our knowledge, then we don't think it exists.
I got something.
If we're not able to reason it through, then, in other words, that it is a mystery, we don't buy mystery in our culture, and we don't buy anything that we can't explain through logic or reason or through something which already exists in our knowledge system.
That's right.
This, to me, is the most laughable arrogance, that the only thing which is known is that which we
is know. That's right. And here's one for you, Hannah. I love this one. Rational thought. What does ration mean? A peace. And it's not only a peace, it's a peace that somebody gives you. Here's your ration.
Yes. Yes. Now, going back to where we started, because this is actually all really important,
mm-hmm.
because you and I are actually talking in, you know, in a sort of a intellect, in reason, in logic, in sharing, all of that sort of stuff, with very sophisticated language, and we're actually negotiating concepts from two knowledge systems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we are also experiential in those concepts. And where we are experiential, I would say, where we are experiential, the concept would disappear.
Well, we become the concept.
Right, right.
We become it.
Right.
Once we experience it, it is us.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, that's a very beautiful way to put it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But our concepts, I mean, at least in my experience, and I see it in your experience too, at least that's the way I see your experience, is that it is experiential, and it's not just analytical, and it's not just intellectual. Those may be the prime communicators, but not always, because sometimes you and I speak beyond words, and sometimes... not only between us, but we've had the great opportunity is an interesting word, we've had the great privilege to enter these worlds as deeply as we can, and we're entering them deeper and deeper because of our desire.
Yes, that's right. And you know, I sort of come back to this idea that you know, I'm sort of coming in from the land and the bush to arrive at a place, and you're coming in, you know, in another tradition for which I don't actually have words.
Me too.
But we arrive in the littoral,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel this washing of Aboriginal and Eastern, you know, this dynamic that here we are, Shanti Mai, American, and here I am, white fella, Australian, bringing together traditions in which neither of us was born.
Right, that's true.
We're like starfish.
Well, how is that?
Or mud crabs.
I like that even better. How are we mud crabs or starfish? Because of the littoral?
And sand hoppers. And beach fleas.
Okay.
You know?
I'm up for it.
all of these wonderful things, because these are all creatures of the littoral. They would extinguish themselves if they were fully in the water.
Yep. Oh,
they would die if they were fully on the land.
Yep, that's right.
But in the literal, they're perfect. They're absolutely, perfectly themselves. They're creatures of the literal. And that's you and that's me.
I love that.
And it's Sahara around the corner.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right.
So we can think of ourselves as muddy, starfishy, crabby. Oysters.
Okay. I personally like starfish a lot.
Oh, you like them? What about anemones? You know,
I love anemones. I love them. And nudibranchs.
All right, you can be an anemone.
Okay. And
and I'll be a crab.
And the feather duster worms.
That's another one.
They're beautiful.
But do you know what else?
What's that?
Stromatolites. Stromatolites, the oldest organism on Earth, and it's in the Pilbara and the Kimberley.
Is it alive?
Yes.
What's it look like?
It looks like a rock, but it's slightly, very slightly spongy, like a firm couch, leather couch. And it doesn't move, it just grows.
Wow.
And it's millions of years old. Millions of years old. It's the oldest life form on Earth. Look it up, stromatolite.
A stromatolite, I will. SAR's doing that now. Yeah.
You need to go and walk among the and they're in the littoral.
Oh, okay. In the Pilbara. Right. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to go to the Bungle Bungles.
My goodness. You need to go there while I've still got friends there in Halls Creek, and they'll take you there.
I would love to go to the Bungle Bungles.
You have to go with Gidja or Jaru people. Don't go with any tourist operators.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't anyhow. I love this, that we are of traditions, and all of the people that I know guide or work with or just simply love, they are the same. They're of that littoral area, that place where the East comes in, but not, it's not our normal home. Like you say, the sand would not be the normal home. It would have to be the place where it's wet and dry and wet and dry. Coming and going, coming and going. It's beautiful. This is really... I was looking last night at some articles about the littoral online because you've mentioned it often.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I actually think this concept of the littoral, I'll say it like you say it because that distinguishes it very clearly from littoral.
Right.
The littoral is a beautiful space because it embodies relationship between any two anything or any combination of anything, because in the littoral, it's constantly dynamic, and there is never a singularity.
And,
never.
And I would like you to explain that again. You have already explained it to me, Hannah, and you have explained it to the people before, but sometimes it's really good to repeat these things. So will you repeat and explain that, please?
Well, a singularity means... as I understand it, reducing things to one.
Right.
And one is I.
Right.
Think of it this way. Can you exist without a context?
No, you cannot. I mean, this is...
Therefore, you're in a relationship... in a context.
Absolutely. This is Buddhism too. This is Buddhism too.
Now, when In terms of other people of my species, which I'll just talk about, one is unviable. Whether it's a male or female, one is unviable.
Yep.
It has no future.
Yep.
Everything needs to reproduce. Therefore, you need two. Right? And Muljali always put one finger up of each hand. He never did that. One of each hand. Because they're different. And they do different things.
But that's beautiful.
Together, they dance. They talk. They shape. Right?
Yep.
Together. There's such a difference between me doing this or, you know, any gesture with one hand, than when I bring two together to create another energy, a dance. This is relationship, and then there's the extension of this relationship into the chair that I'm sitting in, the iPad that I'm talking to, and so on. So the notion that I can exist as a singularity is ridiculous.
Right.
The notion of I, the individual, is equally ridiculous.
Yes.
There is no such concept. And yet we live in a culture on which this fallacy is built.
That's why I say there is no ego. There is no such thing. There are actions that point back to this one, this I, okay, there's actions that point back to this I, but there is no I. There's only interdependence, and everything is interdependent. And
And in the concept of the littoral, it's more than, you know, it's a dance. It's an interlapping.
Absolutely.
Concept interlapping from which something else is produced, generated. And that which is generated, that is what about which we cannot speak. That is what we share.
Right.
It is the shareable and the shared.
Right, right.
Yeah? One of the most fun ways to demonstrate this very easily, if you are on the foreshore going for a nice walk along the beach and you stop, and with your right leg, you stamp the ground, your leg will bounce up. Yes?
Okay.
With your other leg, if you wriggle it in the sand, okay, at the same time, the water comes up. You become enwatered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And with the stamp, you bounce. This is masculine and feminine. My body is a littoral.
Of course. Yes, masculine and feminine. And all, everything, all the way down to the molecular. Hmm? And also,
DNA is two-strand.
Yep. Yep.
It's a relationship.
It's a relationship. And in also in Hinduism, there is the dance of Shakti and Shiva. And the dance of Shakti and Shiva cannot be separated. If the dance is separated, if the dancers are separated, nothing can occur. So, yeah. Isn't it beautiful how they do, in a way, point at each other, huh? Well, I think it's because wisdom is wisdom.
Well, I think the future is in the littoral. Because, you know, and we need to sort of think of perhaps the philosophy of literacy. We need to become literate, knowledgeable in the littoral.
Yes, yes, I love this notion. Is this something that David spoke to you about?
He didn't call it that, but certainly it's what we explored between us, Muljali and I. We explored it as man and woman. We explored it as, and our relationship, which was, you know, it had its own dynamic, its own dance.
Mm-hmm.
and it was Ngarrindjeri and Gadigal Western, where we could, you know, we taught each other and we learned from each other, but so much of it, of what we learned, happened in that interlapping space.
Yes.
Which is of me and of him, but we both shared.
I understand it completely because, because Maharaji was a man and I was a woman and I was from the East and he was from the East and I was from the West and he was my guru and I was his disciple. And the same weaving went on, and he learned a lot from the Western persons, and we learned a lot just watching his gentle movements. That's it. You know, he wasn't a speaker much. So it was also, it's very interesting, Hannah, how both of us really, in fact, do have a lot in common in the way that we've grown spiritually and in wisdom. A very, very, very interesting to me.
It is, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, it's almost like a mirror image in a lot of ways.
Well, and I guess that's another thing. When you are in this littoral, and of the littoral, in a sense, you're nomadic.
Yep.
Because you're not fixed.
That's right. And even if you're fixed, you're not fixed.
You're not fixed.
You're right.
I've wandered around Australia and the world. I'm 67, so for, you know, 47 years, nearly 50 years, the longest I've spent on the ground is probably 3 months.
And I've been traveling. And I've been traveling for 30 years almost, since 1968. Yes. Isn't that interesting, huh?
Since when?
1966, sorry. Yeah. 1986. Hello, Shanti Mai. 1986. Hello.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going.
Well, for me, it's 1976.
Uh-huh.
Which was when I first went to the northwest, up into the remote Australia. And that was in 70, it was actually in 72, 1972, because in 1976 I was in Vancouver.
Okay, that's right.
Canada, at a United Nations conference.
You've been all over the place doing all kinds of things.
I know.
As one single drop of rain blesses the ocean, you too are a blessing in the ocean of boundless experience. Until we meet again, I am, as you are, here and now, the great mystery.